could not feel more disconnected and more alienated from each other than ever before.
House Speaker Paul Ryan saying in a Wednesday morning speech at the Capitol that disillusion has become the default setting for many Americans. And he says it's time to rediscover the nation's common humanity so as to restore civil discourse.
We are finding ourselves too easily retreating to the comfort and the conformity of our tribes. We ourselves don't reach out and we don't offer our time and our energy and we don't understand different perspectives.
Ryan's retiring from Congress when his current term ends. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
And your final numbers on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average ended the day up 172 points to close at 25,414. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
The administration announced a $12 billion bailout plan Tuesday for farmers hurt by unjustified retaliatory tariffs. Many lawmakers are hoping the president will be able to work out a deal with our trading partners. Mark Check is a dairy farmer in Minnesota. He joined Fox Business to talk about this bailout and how the tariffs have affected his dairy.
Well, this is a short-term fix. We need to fix the global. We need to be on fair trade. Our dairy farm is struggling right now. Probably worse than it ever has. I do agree with President Trump. We need to fix this long term so that we can have sustainable agriculture.
Meanwhile, on the business side of things, Satori Cheese President Jeff Schwager talks about how the tariffs have impacted his cheese factory.
You know, a little 10% of our business is export business. We've had to reduce basically our selling price to cover the tariffs in Mexico with our import partners and our customers there so that the consumers aren't seeing an impact on it. So what was profitable business is now unprofitable or maybe break even at best.
Schwager also talks about what he'd like to see.
Before the tariffs went in place, we were focused on growing the business and growing profitable business around the world. Now we're focused on maintaining business. It's not good for the long term.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. The weather currently could be described with one word, that is rain. We've got showers tonight with a high of 79 degrees, thunderstorms. Tomorrow we have more showers and thunderstorms, possibly before 7 a.m. We have a high of around 68 degrees. Friday we have more showers, 87 degrees, and then Saturday we have a chance of showers, 85 degrees, partly cloudy for the weekend, so it looks like we're going to have a rainy week, and it looks like there's not going to be much to do outside. So that is our weather. I have a very exclusive in-studio interview coming up with Mark Barber, so stay tuned for that. I'm really excited.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. I am here with Mark Barber, owner of Zoop. He is here to talk about a roller hockey league that he is planning on introducing in the local area. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Good evening, David. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. I'm actually a native of Queens, New York, where I grew up playing a lot of playground street hockey and roller hockey. I've been a resident of Somerset County since 1990. I'm currently happily married to my wife of almost 30 years, and I have three kids. We live over in Montgomery Township in Belmead. I'm also, as you mentioned, the owner of the Zoop at the Shops at Flemington Fast Casual Restaurant.
Okay, great. That's really cool that you're so involved with the community. And another thing that you really try to do is local hockey. How are you involved specifically with local hockey in the community?
Well, I'm in the middle of putting together a Facebook group to find interest for an adult recreational league, 18 and over, both men and women, people of all different skill levels. The Hunterdon County, even Somerset County area, there's not a lot of quality rinks. We are looking at four facilities, two indoor and two outdoor. in the hopes that we can find enough people to start teams, get permits, take care of any liability issues, hire an officiating staff, do all the button-down work to get a league not only running but successfully growing year after year.
Yeah, and you have a lot of history with roller hockey from growing up through your childhood. So what specific history do you have with roller hockey leagues?
Back in 2006, I had been the manager of records at a law firm in New York on the east side of Manhattan. I wound up spending 34 years there. At some point, I wanted to join a team into what's called the Chelsea Piers roller hockey team. There were 30 teams there that had been playing 15 years. I pitched it to the executive committee as a way for lawyers to go in and play against guys on teams like Goldman Sachs, Ernst & Young, all these big banks, Wall Street firms, play games, go out for beers, make buddies, and get some business. So they financed a nice bunch of shirts. They gave us money for taxis from the east, from the west side to the east side where the office was. I'm holding up a jersey we made. I was a big fan of the San Jose Sharks. Over at Chelsea Piers, I didn't realize it was the last season there. They had 15 years, and it was great. I put together a team of everyone from kids in the mailroom to partners at the firm. I had a Jamaican guy that had never picked up a hockey stick in his life. I had female attorneys that had only played field hockey in college, and we had a handful of three or four Canadian guys and people that were good skaters. So it was a mixed bag of a team. We went out. We were in the third tier. We went 8-2 the first season. So it got off really great. The reason I went with this logo, which has the San Jose Sharks inaugural jersey, and instead of biting through a hockey stick, the shark in this logo is biting through a gavel. And the initials of the firm are highlighted in the word Sharks, spelled with a Z at the end. Now, Chelsea Piers had a rule that you had to buy a home and away jersey, a white and dark. I went to them and said, look, I don't want to spend $15, $20 on two cheap shirts. I'd rather spend $40 or $50 on one nice shirt. So I kitted it out with nice sewed-on numbers, names, as close as I could get to a real NHL sweater. The reason I went with teal is that was the one color they would let me use for both home and away games. It was a neutral color that no one else was using. So I had this team. I had these jerseys. They even paid for hockey socks. I mean, we looked sharp. The first year out there, I wanted a team that wasn't just guys in, you know, old Ranger jerseys. So we looked sharp. We had fun. They gave us money for cab rides, for beer at bars afterwards. We were all having a great time. Halfway through the season, I found out that Chelsea Piers was breaking the rink for the Hudson River Park that's now there. The Hell's Kitchen neighborhood Chelsea Piers was in was gentrified. When I started there in 2006, there were a lot of gay bars in the area. There were 30 teams going in and out of this rink, sometimes brawling and fighting. And frankly, the neighborhood, while gentrifying, was bringing in more families and kids and people spending a million or two on beautiful apartments. So the community board started pushing out things they didn't like, the adult clubs, the bars, and mainly this hockey rink. So instead of a place for adults to play, they ripped it all out. And they did put something else along the riverfront, and there was a skate park for small children and everything. But this roller rink that had had a great program going for 15 years was suddenly gone. So now I had the team and no place to stay. So I looked around and I saw in Manhattan real estate is so expensive, it's tough to find any place where a rink is feasible. They just get destroyed and a building goes up. At 96th Street and 3rd Avenue, near the FDR, there was a rink in a park called Stanley Isaacs that in 2006, 2007, when I started exploring it, was really out to ruin. It had boards and benches. 10 or 15 years earlier, guys like Adam Graves, Pat LaFontaine from the Islanders, raised about $100,000 to put that rink back in, and it was great for a few years, but frankly, kids were setting things on fire in there, banging baseballs against the boards. It was just a shambles, really all broken up. The surface was horrible, cracked, rough asphalt, but that's all I could find. So I went back to my law firm and said, look, I'd like to start a league with our team prominent. I'm going to cherry pick out from those 30 over at Chelsea Piers, Ernst & Young, Goldman Sachs, all the big banks, Barclays. We had a heavy-duty roster of teams. So again, our lawyers can go out and hopefully get business going out for BS afterwards. So I got an officiating staff together. I hired the best people I could, made sure they were certified by USA Hockey, which was the governing sanctioning board back then. Got the permits I needed. Couldn't really do much about the rink. You know, the city is not going to chip in money to do much. We eventually had to do it on our own, putting down street ice paint, eventually tiles. I left the league a few years ago, but the new guys running it changed the name from Manhattan Roller Hockey League to the New York City Roller Hockey League. They have lights. I started with 12 teams. Now they have 34 and five tiers. All along, I just decided, you know, I don't want what I saw at Chelsea Piers, which is brawling and fighting. One of our playoff games, the season we were there in 2006, a Tier 1 championship was going on, and one team was losing by 3 goals with about 5 minutes left in the third period. The goaltender and his defenseman turns around at the blue line, and they're jawing at each other. They actually went at each other and started fighting. The whole game ended in a brawl. It was just madness. No one really cared at that point. It was the last season. The refs weren't really calling things. I said, when I start my league, we're not going to have all this nonsense. First of all, I don't want to be liable. I don't want to see guys getting hurt. And we had small children playing in this shared park. It was a rink and a playground. So we instituted things like incidental contact. There wasn't any rough full checking. We had a zero-tolerance fighting policy. If you threw a punch and instigated a fight, there was no warning, there was no suspension, you were out. That was the only way to keep guys from really going at it and starting brawls. Now, games got chippy, especially the playoffs. It's not like words weren't exchanged and people didn't push and shove and have little clusters and things, but we never had fighting. Guys respected that rule, and we didn't have brawls. I wouldn't stand for it. So it really developed from there, and every year we started adding two, sometimes 14 teams at a time. The first season, SNY showed up in August when we were handling our playoffs and wanted to do an episode of a series called Street Games that was sponsored by Chevrolet, and this came out of the blue. I had people up in Brooklyn, the Bronx, all these guys running leagues for like 30, 40 years that said, well, why is SNY coming to you? You're a brand new league. No one's even heard of you. But they filmed it, and they were there for a whole weekend, filmed the games. The big finale was when our championship trophy, which is a replica of the Stanley, came up with my kids bringing it out and people surprised. And it was a nice episode. I don't know who really saw it, but it was pretty amazing to have a TV show done about a brand new league. Mm-hmm. The next year, the New York Times came and did an article about the NYU med students playing a game of accountants from Price Waterhouse. So we got some coverage there. In 2011, the Wall Street Journal did like a whole three-quarter page ad featuring a guy named John Foster, who won two NCAA Division I championships with the University of Denver. We had Princeton Ice Hockey's best female goalie, who had the records for the best goaltender ever in that program. We also eventually had a woman named Charlotte Nicholson, who was on Team USA, won a gold medal for the inline world hockey team. So it was a lot of quality. Anyone Googling Manhattan and roller hockey found us. And, you know, I didn't let in teams that were a bunch of guys that wanted to drink and fight. I wanted good play, strong, quality officiating, and it just grew and grew. And we had tryouts with 200 guys showing up, a free agents list. People really enjoyed it, and it's thriving to this day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you were able to build this roller hockey empire, which is really cool. How formative were your early years when you were a child playing hockey in the streets? How important was that to lead you to where you are now?
That was my favorite sport. I come from a lower middle class family from a neighborhood called Jackson Heights. And while some of the kids in my neighborhood had the Bobby Orr gloves and, you know, pretty much everything an NHL player would wear, I got some knee pads my father used to put down tile. I got some gloves that you would use to, like, do plumbing. I didn't have great equipment. I didn't have boot skates. I had those horrible metal clamp-on things that you spring open and spring back. I had a stick. I don't even know if we had pucks. We had rolls of electrical tape. Sometimes we didn't have goals. It was two garbage cans. So it was very primitive, very crude, playing in the streets, playing in my local public and Catholic high school playgrounds, wherever we could get a game. That was my favorite sport, whether it was with a ball, a puck, a playground, a street. I was constantly playing hockey.
Yeah. And, you know, you were really, you know, this was formative, and now you're creating this local league. And we're going to touch on this quickly. We got to head to commercial in a minute. But just briefly, so we have a preview, so people, you know, definitely want to stay through the commercial and listen to what you're going to talk about. Briefly, what exactly you're trying to do now and, you know, replicate that Manhattan League and bring it to local Huntington County?
I am looking for quality players. Again, not guys that want to drink and brawl. I'm not interested in that. People that want a good game of hockey with good refs at a good facility. We're looking at two indoor and two outdoor facilities in the Somerset and Huntington County. I set up a Facebook group called the Central Jersey Roller Hockey League. And again, it's just in the formative stages. This is only about 2 or 3 weeks old. Already I have almost 50 men and women. Everyone over 18 will be welcome, regardless of skill level. To set something up, we'll probably start with scrimmages when it's cool enough, build teams from there, build a league. I'm interested in reaching out to other rinks. The Newtown rink, I'm in contact with them. I know Piscataway has 7 rinks. So anywhere that's travel distance, I'd love to connect rinks and leagues and players and just start to rebuild the sport, which frankly is drying up. There's no real kids programs in Huntington County. Eventually, I'd like to build something in the Manhattan Roller Hockey League. Ever since we started, we work with a group called the Yorkville Youth Athletic League. We work with 2nd through 5th graders. And again, we're teaching kids to skate, to play hockey, and that feeds people into the adult program. So build a pipeline through grade school, high school, into the adult program. Just get roller hockey thriving again in Central Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I started the show, my saying was bring hockey to Huntington County. I've been doing these interviews with all these great people. I'm so glad to be able to have you on the show. And when we come back from commercial, we're going to talk about this Central Jersey Hockey League that you're trying to form and really go into the specifics with refs, with venues, and really touch on what we are trying to build here for Central Jersey. So stay tuned for that.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Huntington County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. For those of you who have not tuned in yet, I'm here with Mark Barber, who's a really cool guy in the local community. He's trying to bring a roller hockey league to Central Jersey, the Central Jersey Roller Hockey League. And to do this, he needs to find some venues. So what venues are you looking at specifically to try to bring this roller hockey into Huntington County and the local area?
Well, I'll start with the one I'm most interested in. On Milltown Road in Branchburg, the Bridgewater area, there's something called the Milltown Road Rink that's in something called the North Greenway Park. And there's all sorts of other soccer fields, and it's a whole sort of area where there's recreation facilities galore. There's a very nice rink there with a very playable service, with lights, with boards, benches, really a nice facility, clean and almost never used. So I'm talking with the recreation department there, and they're willing to permit us. But, you know, there's liability issues. There's a whole host of things. You can't just show up and start a league and play. You've got to make sure First of all, you're a 501c3. Sometimes they want tax-exempt status, and they won't issue a permit for a whole league and a whole season until you show that. They want to make sure you have insurance coverage in case anybody gets hurt. They don't want to get sued. So that facility is the one I'm most interested in. It's not Huntington County. It is Somerset County, but it looks like it's a nice central spot that people from Huntington could jump over to. So that's the number one outdoor rink. Number two on my list is the Summer Road rink in Reddington, possibly Flemington. That rink doesn't have lights. It does have nice benches, and the boards are in good shape. The surface, frankly, is atrocious. It's going to need a lot of work, which, frankly, they're saying, look, you can't go and fill in cracks and things. You'll have to wait for us to budget it and spend, you know, money fixing it up. It's playable, but it really needs a lot of work. So that's the other one I'm looking at. That would be for the warm weather months. For the cold weather, I'm looking at two indoor facilities. The first being the HealthQuest facility on Route 31. It has some nice basketball courts that they can put in half or quarters, depending on how much space we need. They already have something called street games with the New Jersey Devils. They have a youth hockey, a shoe hockey league there. So they already have sticks. They already have goals. And they say we can skate there. Members of our league would not have to pay for a membership there. They have 10,000 people there. There's possibly sponsorship opportunities. So that would be great for bad weather, the winter. In the Manhattan Roller Hockey League, we had a good 3 or 4 months where even in March and April, a storm can come in, drop water, it would freeze, and then for days afterwards, games are postponed. So I'm looking to find something indoors. The last facility I'm looking at is actually in Frenchtown, the Frenchtown Roller Rink, which has its own challenges. It doesn't really have boards. The benches are just kind of right behind a brick wall. It's a weird shape. You'd have to put up netting to protect kids and spectators and things. The surface is beautiful, and it's already marked for hockey. So I'm in touch with all four of those facilities. It's really just a matter of finding enough days where it's cool weather. I really can't start a scrimmage and have people meeting at a rink in the heat of summer. It's just dangerous. So I'm waiting for either a very cool weekend or the fall, September, October, to have this group that's on Facebook all go and meet, start talking, and just deciding which rinks we want to pursue just by having pickup games. From there, it's a matter of just finalizing either getting a tax-exempt status, insurance policy. We'd have to have dues. We'd have to look for an officiating crew if it wasn't going to be someone on each team that calls. You know, we can start very informally, just white and dark jerseys, not spend a lot of money, not charge people much, just sort of a grassroots. People show up, throw in $50-$60 each just to get something going. Once we start doing permits, insurance, officiating, then it gets a little more expensive. We always had at least a 10-game season. We had playoffs. We had nice trophies. We had shirts we awarded players. It depends on how really fancy you want everything to be. People like to be in a – I want to create a league that's quality players, quality refs, quality trophies, and a quality facility. And it's going to take some time, and I'm hoping this Facebook group builds – and we eventually all get to meet and skate, and then we have to decide skill levels. Do we have two or three? We may have outright beginners for people that are interested in hockey but have never played it, and find some of the players maybe with coaching or teaching experience to work with them. The league I started had 12 teams in 2007. They're at like five different divisions, including an over 30 league with 34 teams. So the league I started, really, I'd never expected to get more than maybe 16, 18 teams in one division playing in playoffs. Now they've got four different trophies, and it's great. The Upper East Side now has a hotbed of hockey that, when I got there, was just a waste-strewn, broken-up rink. They put in lights. They dropped the sports court all with their own money. The city will only pay for so much, and it's really doing great. I'm hoping to replicate that in what I see as a place that's just sparse of any kind of roller hockey other than people meeting for pickup games.
Yeah, and in order to replicate that, you definitely need to work out the logistics of the league. That includes equipment, referees, other necessities that a roller hockey league would need, just like you had in Manhattan. So how would you go about working those necessities out?
Well, unfortunately, USA Hockey no longer sponsors roller hockey. They still have an ice program, and they do a great job there, including the Olympic-caliber teams. About 10 years ago, they decided just to back out of roller hockey. So there is a sanctioning Roller Sports USA would be where I would start. Contact them, find out who the closest local rep is with that organization, say I'm looking for refs. When I started with USA Hockey, they gave me a list of all the people near Manhattan that might want to work games. I contacted people, had them show up at the rink. We decided what to pay them. We had a Chiefs referee decided on scheduling, and it gave me a basis of good quality reffing. Because as you know, a lot of times you play in these leagues and people are all drawing at the refs and there's all this disagreement. When the referees aren't good, it really deflates the quality of play and just people not willing to draw and waste time yelling about it. When you have good refs that know what they're doing or can show someone a certificate that says, look, I'm qualified to this level, there's a lot less argument. So we start with that, getting good officials.
Yeah, and the zero tolerance policy. I really want to touch on that because that, for me, being younger, you know, there might be players bigger than me, even though I'm pretty tall, but There are definitely that zero tolerance policy. No one's going to be throwing a punch, blindside hit, like you'd see a Brad Marchand do in the NHL. You're not going to have punching fighting. So how important is that for you to really establish this zero tolerance policy for fighting cheap shots? And you do have incidental contact, excuse me. But how would you just eliminate fighting in your league?
Well, again, when I was at Chelsea Piers in 2006 with the team, we had a Jamaican guy who had never played hockey, a woman, attorneys from the firm that had played field hockey. I had a lot of beginners, three or four great players. And I saw guys on other teams driving our female players into the board, like intentionally to kind of say you don't belong here and everything. It was a bit of a mob scene, and I saw a goalie and his own defenseman at a Tier 1 playoff game start fighting. It was crazy. I said, when I start my league, I don't need to deal with injuries and lawsuits and things. Everyone signed the waiver very explicitly stating, we are not liable. You cannot full body check. It's just incidental contact. We also instituted a zero tolerance policy on fighting. That if you're defending yourself and someone's attacking you, fine. We understand you have to defend yourself. If you instigate a fight and start punching people, there was no warning, there was no suspension. You were thrown out of the league, and we did that all the time. We did that with whole teams, that we warned a few times. You got a chippiness is fine, a little. We understand there's going to be things in playoff games especially, but if people are just going to go out there looking to hurt people, goodbye. We threw out whole teams and just said, your season's over, goodbye. Mm-hmm. You've got to be strict. You've got to be tough and just let people know you mean business.
Yeah, and speaking of physicality, the New York Islanders, they're a team that we both are fans of, and basically they're going about this new physical hockey. They lost John Tavares. They're signing a bunch of old-time grinders, essentially. We've both got our fisherman jerseys on, me and Mark. If you're on the Facebook Live, you can definitely see. So the fisherman jersey, that's a hot topic right now with the Islanders alternates unveiling soon. You mind just giving us a brief history into the jerseys we're both wearing and how important that is to you as a fan growing up?
Well, I grew up in a neighborhood where everybody was a Ranger fan, and I took so much flack. Even before they started winning cups, people called them the Crylanders when I said I was rooting for the Islanders. And I went to Ranger game after Ranger game. My firm that I worked for had season tickets right behind Ron Greshner's girlfriend, Carol Alt, at one of the blue lines, and another one. So I went to a lot of Ranger games with Barry Beck, Ron Duguay. I saw that team, the Rangers, shoveling money onto the ice, and they never went anywhere. Yeah. To me, even though they hadn't won cups yet, the Islanders were just a grittier, harder-playing team. They weren't doing, I don't know if you remember the jeans commercials Ron Duguay was doing. It was kind of, it was like a fashion show more than a hockey team. So I just had more respect for the Islanders. The jersey I wore, always had Dennis Potvin's number 5. I was always a fan of him. This is my Manhattan Roller Hockey League jersey. I just had a lot more respect for them. I'm sorry, what was...
Yeah, so just the Islanders, the fisherman logo.
The fisherman logo. I was intrigued. The logo they had was always kind of interesting, but frankly, they had the NY, and it was a replica of Long Island. I liked it. This thing came, and a lot of people revile it. They despised it. I'm sure everyone knows about the fish sticks that would get thrown on the ice at their games, and I felt bad for them. I think the lighthouse is a nice touch. I know they were considering that as an alternate. I always thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they're paying tribute to it and bringing it back.
Yeah.
I'm actually wearing Wendell Clark's jersey, number 17. He was traded from Toronto, who retired his number, this number 17, in 2008, to the Quebec Nordiques, where he played for a few seasons. When Quebec was going from Quebec City and they got transferred to Denver, where they became the Colorado Avalanche, he refused to go. So he was traded to the Islanders for Claude Lemieux. Of course, the next year, the first year in Denver, that team won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So I wore this today just in tribute sort of, to a guy that was on the Islanders for a bit from Toronto with all the Tavares stuff going on. I just always thought it was a cool, unusual, someone like the other NHL mm-hmm. logos. After three or four seasons, they just realized, you know, between the lawsuits from the Gorton's Fishermen people and all the scorn throughout the league, they just decided to go back to the NY and the Long Island logo.
Yeah,
so, I like this one better.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so it represents an interesting time, just like we're in an interesting time now for local Hunterdon County hockey. We're trying to set up this Central Jersey Roller Hockey League. We're trying to bring hockey to Hunterdon County, the local area. I respect you for trying to do that, and I hope you have success, and I wish you luck in this pursuit. I'll be with you along the way. Glad we were able to do this show and really just advertise this and get it out to people. And the Facebook chat, Central Jersey Roller Hockey Group, just please join the Facebook group if you have any interest in roller hockey, because this is a great thing that we're trying to do. Hunterdon County doesn't have a lot of hockey. We're on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio. I'm the only person who's probably ever talked about hockey on this show. And right now we're here with Mark, who's really a catalyst for this community, bringing roller hockey back. So thank you so much for joining me today.
David, thank you. I've got the experience. I've got the drive. I'm just looking for other like-minded players. Let's get together and get a great program going.
Yep. And
thank
you
for your having me on the show.
Of course. It was an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today. We will be right back with Islander statistician Alex Novay to talk more about the Islanders' analytical problems they had last season and how they can resolve that next year. But for now, that was Mark Barber. Thank you so much for joining me today. Have a good day.
Thank you, David.
USA Radio News.
Today at the White House, President Trump met with the president of the EU to discuss a fairer trade deal. Now, after that meeting, the president addressed the media.
We agreed today, first of all, to work together towards zero tariffs, zero non-tariff barriers, and zero subsidies on non-auto industrial goods. Thank you. We will also work to reduce barriers and increase trade in services, chemicals, pharmaceuticals, medical products, as well as soybeans. Soybeans is a big deal. And the European Union is going to start almost immediately to buy a lot of soybeans. They're a tremendous market. Buy a lot of soybeans from our farmers.
Also today in Washington, President Trump said he would not host Russian President Vladimir Putin in Washington until 2019. This is USA Radio News.
I'm Captain Obvious, and Hotels.com rewards me basically everywhere I stay.
Hey!
So why am I outside my beachfront suite, aimlessly leading a 40-guest conga through the streets of Myrtle Beach?
Hey!
Because Hotels.com lets me do me.
Hey!
And because once you start a conga, apparently it's impossible to stop.
Hey!
I have no idea where I'm leading these people. Hey! Hotels.com. You do you and get rewarded.
When working at a growing business, you wear many hats. The new business hat, the buying toner for the copy machine hat, the sifting through tons of resumes hat. You can throw away that last hat thanks to Indeed.com. When posting your job, Indeed lets you add screener questions that give you a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates. So go ahead, dust off that extra long lunch hat. Hiring's better when you've got your short list. Save time on hiring when you post a job on Indeed. Get started today at Indeed.com/hire.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. I'm here with a very special guest, Alex Nove. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I've never spoken to someone in the field of data science, so what exactly does being a data scientist entail?
Thanks for having me.
Hello, you there?
Oh, yep, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you now.
Great. Yes, sir. Usually involves some general academic statistics combined with programming skills to handle a lot of the bigger data sets that people are dealing with more and more, and then actual domain knowledge of what you're working on, whether that's hockey or... And then the actual work can be those numbers, everything from figuring out what metrics you should be looking at, evaluating specific programs, the numbers say if it's a good idea or not, to some of the bigger modeling work trying to.
I'm sorry, I'm having some audio issues here. I'm going to try to recall you. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Having trouble hearing you. So we will be right back to Destination Hockey. We're going to try to get this interview in. I'm really excited to speak to Alex. Has a lot of information here. So we will be right back. Please stay tuned. We're going to resolve this.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. We're here with Islanders statistician for The Athletic, Alex Nove. Thank you so much for joining us. Before the commercial break, we were talking about what exactly being a data scientist entails. So if you mind just repeating some of the stuff you said.
Sure. Hopefully it comes through a little bit better now, and feel free to jump in if not. But essentially, a data scientist is all about taking data and using it to provide value. So that can be everything using statistics combined with computer programming to handle some of the bigger data sets we're dealing with, to actually having domain knowledge of the area you're working in, whether it's hockey or business or nonprofit world, really understanding what it is you're trying to answer with the data so that you're using it correctly. And then from there, the day-to-day can be everything from figuring out what metrics you should be looking at to evaluating particular programs or decisions. Trying to assess what's going to happen in the future and plan accordingly.
And you have been You have not been in hockey, you know, your whole career. You've been doing some traditional data science, but recently you joined The Athletic as an Islander statistician. So how were you able to combine data science and hockey and make yourself a more marketable journalist?
Yeah, so for me, you know, I've been fortunate to really sort of build up both the hockey piece and outside data science. So I've been working in general business strategy for a while. I'm on tryout data science and sports analysis. The advantages of sports analytics is there's a ton of public data. Learning things on my own and then applying it to hockey, and then that's helped me in my career. I was doing this full time on the side while I was able to continue some of my practice as well to continue to do it.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick commercial break, our 5:45 break, and we'll be right back with Alex Nove.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. Again, we're here with Alex Nove, and we were talking about your personal story about how you were in data science, then got into hockey. So hockey is a great sport because it's really going through this resurgence, this renaissance era almost, where they're starting to use a lot of analytics to describe players. And one player that's been a really, you know, popular analytical guy has been Calvin DeHaan. And the Islanders had the worst defense in recent memory last season. And Calvin DeHaan's gone now. When he was injured, all things, you know, went terribly, and now he's in Carolina. So do you think the Islanders' defense will be able to survive without DeHaan in the same unit as last year?
You know, the defense is a piece I'm actually somewhat optimistic about this season. You know, you look through, and while they were, you know, absolutely a disaster last season, they tended to really underperform what you would expect from the players that they have there. And really, you know, when they had all of their defensive troubles, it really was across the board. You know, as much as Seidenberg gets grief, and he was, you know, uniquely struggled there, pretty much everyone on that defensive core was having issues, which makes you think that there could definitely be a serious systems issue. You know, I looked into this a little bit at The Athletic in a piece I wrote there, and essentially they were having a lot of troubles, you know, actually preventing shots in the defensive zone and preventing passes in the defensive zone, and so a lot of teams were getting higher quality chances pretty much across the entire Islanders lineup. So I'm optimistic that with Trotz in charge there, you know, he's absolutely going to be putting in a different system there. And I think, at least starting in, I'm going to be pretty hopeful that, you know, the players they have there do have the talent to implement that. And I do think that we could see a turnaround compared to what happened last year.
Yeah, so Doug Waite was basically given a lot of criticism for never changing his system. He went with this system that really didn't clear out in front of the net and basically gave up a lot of shots. Barry Trotz gives up, on average, 220 goals per year on teams that he's coached. Barry Trotz is a great defensive coach. What specific structure and specific type of system do you see him implementing that would really change the defense from a completely different system that Doug Waite ran?
Yeah, so I'm certainly not going to compete with Barry Trotz and try and tell him what to do with X's and O's. I think things that I'll be looking for in general out of his system are really starting to pressure the offensive team when they're getting set up in the offensive zone.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw things that some analysts track, like plays that come from behind the net or plays that come from low to high passes. And those were areas where the Islanders were spectacularly, worst or second to worst in the league, and really reflected the situation where other teams were getting set up in one spot that seemed like a safe area in the offensive zone, but then completing a bunch of passes and really getting a great scoring chance out of it. So I'm going to be looking for a defensive team that's really trying to disrupt those plays before they happen, are not allowing players to get set up behind the net in the corners, but are instead looking to pressure them, force movement, and then hopefully intercept some of those passes rather than allowing those high-quality scoring chances.
Yeah, it's so cool that you're able to, analyze that. The technology in hockey is really, really interesting nowadays. One thing that has nothing to do with analytics and is just a straight-up fact, the Islanders allowed 5 goals in 22 games last season. That is ridiculous and cannot happen again. One of the bright spots, though, was Ryan Pulock. He finished with 10 goals in the season, which is third in Islanders rookie defenseman history. Do you expect him to play with Nick Leddy next season as kind of that top right-hand guy? Or do you expect him to stick with Thomas Hickey in what was a very, very defensively and offensively sound pairing?
I think ultimately we'll probably see a little bit of both. I would imagine that Barry Trotz is going to want to play around with things and just understand what he has there. But my first guess, what I would try first at least and give the most shot, would be keeping him with Thomas Hickey there. I like the idea of splitting up the talent you have between Leddy and Pulock between two different lines. Plus, I think Hickey is a guy that really complements Pulock well. Hickey is very much the player on the team who relies on his smarts, who knows the defensive systems really well, and has more of that defensive gap pressure and presence there. So as have someone who's as young as Pulock is going to be one of the youngest guys there on the defensive side of things. Having somebody who's going to know the systems and understand where people can be, as well as potentially take on more of that responsibility as Pulock is trying to engage offensively, I think is a pairing that we saw worked well last year, and I would be tempted to continue that unless you really feel the need to change things up, on the top line.
Yeah, and the Islanders, another weird thing about them last year, they seemingly defied shot metrics and just really, this didn't make sense, to be honest. They were terrible when outshooting opponents. They were 10-15-5 when they outshot their opponents, 0-1 when shots were even, and 25-21-5 when they were outshot. That's just backwards and from a casual fan. How do you kind of explain that trend analytically, and do you expect it to change next season?
Yeah, so that's something we actually see league-wide from an analytic perspective. That's been one of the big things that we found while sort of really digging into the statistics behind things. So I would definitely expect that to continue. And the key thing is essentially we found score effects, which are teams, once they start falling behind, tend to get way more shots on goal than the teams who are in the lead. And there's a bunch of different explanations that have been given for this that we don't totally have a good sense of, whether it's a systems thing, whether it's who the coaches are choosing to give ice time to. But essentially, the key, version of this is you'll see a team get the lead and then be so focused on protecting it that they start really shelling in the defensive zone, playing that more conservative version of hockey that's really just focused on goal prevention. And as a result, the trailing team will end up getting a bunch of shots in response. So
oh, wow.
I think that's something you're going to continue to see where, the shot counter balances out or even goes back towards the trailing team, but, not necessarily able to then turn that into a goal and turn the game around.
Wow, that's interesting. I never thought of it like that. It's really cool that you're able to, kind of give that perspective on, kind of flipping the game upside down. Conventional things that you don't always expect, really kind of make sense when you look at it from an analytic perspective. And another thing that, kind of was weird last season was Anthony Beauvillier, very talented young player, first round pick. The Islanders traded a draft pick to get him, and he was the first Islander since John Tavares to score in 5 straight games last year. He led the Islanders in goals since New Year's Day, And a lot of people will just kind of credit this to just him piggybacking off Matt Barzal, one of the best young players in the league. From your, you know, side of the argument, do you think that Beauvillier should be a second-line center, which Dan Fischler, other analysts have suggested, or do you think he should stick with what works, Barry Trotz, and just stick him with Matt Barzal again and try to get that line going?
No, I think part of it's going to come down to, you know, what we see from Brock Nelson, if he's ready to take that second-line center position. But I definitely think that putting Beauvillier there could be a good fit. You know, what we've seen from Barzal, I have pretty high confidence that anybody you put on his wing is going to produce. And so you can sort of, you know, within reason, use that as a free spot where you know somebody can contribute. But Beauvillier, I'm very high on and really do think he could potentially thrive in that center role moving forward. In juniors, you know, when he was playing in the Quebec League, he was essentially the entire offensive production for his team. You know, the points difference between him and the second-place scorer was enormous. And then, you know, while we're still getting into the very early stages of analytics in the junior league, he was someone who really played a really strong possession game, where he was carrying the puck through the neutral zone, entering the offensive zone with the puck on his stick. And that's a skill that the Islanders don't have a lot of, but they do already have it in Matt Barzal. So I'd be tempted to split those two up on two different lines so that we really have a puck carrier who can complete that possession game, no matter which one of them is on the ice.
Yeah, and the puck possession, the Islanders are seemingly going to transition into a more dump-and-chase unit based off the Islanders' players that were added. Matt Martin, Cal Clutterbuck, Case Cizikas are going to form that fourth line. And then your third line is going to be another checking line. Leo Komarov, Filppula, Kunackle, you know, these guys, Jan Kovar, that are hitters. Do you think the Islanders are going to focus more on physicality, fighting, and hitting next year? Or do you think they will focus more on continuing their offensive success from last season?
You know, I think they're probably going to try and play more physical between the players that they brought in who know those roles and, you know, the coaching structure looking at how poorly the defense played last year. I'm sure it's also putting some of that on the forwards and going to want them to play a more conservative defensive game. That said, for me, you know, my bias is always, you know, leaning against the physicality and playing more of a skilled game. So I definitely have some concerns about how that will play out, but I would not be shocked. And we'll see with the ice time distributions, you know, how much those bottom line players end up playing. But I do suspect they're going to play a more physical game, and we're going to have to see just how much of an issue that causes and whether it does balance things out by improving anything on the defensive side.
Mm-hmm. And an analytical kind of enigma, in my opinion, is just Josh Bailey, because this guy has been with the Islanders forever. And fans hate him for some reason. I love him. He's been a fighter, a warrior for the Islanders. But he's kind of been, you know, kind of mooching off John Tavares' success, you could say, and just assist after assist after assist to Tavares, Lee, and Barzal on the power play. Do you see him having a regression now that John Tavares is on the Maple Leafs? Or do you expect him to, you know, he's got his big contract and just go out there and play like he did last season, no matter who's his center?
I'm generally a pretty big Bailey fan. You know, he's certainly not going to be, you know, putting up all-star numbers every single season, but I do think he's going to be a solid top six contributor for the next few years. You know, in terms of raw point totals, yeah, I think anybody who goes from playing with John Tavares to not is going to see a potential dip. But I do think he has that talent, whether it's on the first line with Barzal or the second line, to really put up some points. And then, you know, on the power play last year, he really was getting into a stride there on the right side of the ice, where he and Barzal really took turns distributing the puck. And he had some nice plays where it really was him creating the offense by making those cross-ice passes, hitting different seams to set up those players. And so while, you know, that unit's definitely going to take a hit without Tavares, I do think he still has a skill set and can play really well on that power play unit to continue to produce there.
Yeah, another transition the Islanders will be going through next year is in the net. Jaroslav Halak was 20-26-6 on the season. Thomas Greiss was 13-8-2. Greiss was just really atrocious last year, but his record was really good, and just the Islanders seemed to play better when he was in net, which is really weird. How do you explain that from an analytical side, where Thomas Greiss was just getting so much more goals and Jaroslav Halak was getting left out there to dry, facing 50 shots a game?
Yeah, so I think there's two main schools of thought, but the bigger one by far on the analytics side is essentially that, you know, there's a lot of luck behind that. You know, we saw this previously in baseball looking at pitchers and whether you should evaluate pitchers based on their wins or factor in the run support. And I think with goalies, it's pretty similar, where on the analytics side, a lot of people have come out and said that wins really aren't a good stat to evaluate the goaltenders. you know, there's just so much depending on, you know, what sort of support they're getting, what sort of defense they have in front of them that particular day, you know, what opportunities do they really have to prevent in front of them, that really changes and takes a lot of, you know, the things that the goaltender can't control go into that win stat. So I look at that and I see that that's mostly a fluke. Now, the possible footnote I would add to that is there are some people, you know, Justin Borge's written about this, I'm certainly open to it, that when you have a goaltender behind you that you really don't trust, it does change a little bit of the systems. You know, the defensemen are going to be reacting, really trying to prevent the sorts of shots that maybe with a more confident goaltender they'd be willing to let through and just give a clear path to the net. So I'm open to the idea that, you know, there were some differences in how they were reacting there, but I would suspect that most of it is simply just, you know, the luck of how many goals they happen to score that particular day. And a lot of analytics is all about figuring out, you know, how much is this a real trend that's meaningful versus, you know, what do we think is just a chance thing that we can wait out.
Wow, that's really interesting. And then another interesting player coming in, Robin Lehner, is this guy that's just really left out to dry in Buffalo last season. I think that's something that's kind of, you know, everyone could agree on. But he's a guy who lets anger kind of take over his game, and statistically he's not great, but he seems to be a good goalie when you look at some of the analytics about, you know, he had a terrible team in front of him. He's going to be playing on a one-year prove-it type deal where his career is on the line. Do you expect Robin Lehner to have, you know, a success story this season, or do you think he'll continue to struggle in front of the Islanders' defense?
You know, I'm certainly hoping he will. You know, I'm not sold on it just based on what we've seen in past performance. You know, this is also one where I think, you know, any statistical analyst will admit that goaltenders are really, really hard to predict. We don't have a ton of advanced statistics on them to really get a sure thing. And especially with someone who's moving to a different team with a defense that's going to have a different structure and just announced today is going to have a different goaltending coach, you know, I think both him and Grice, they're really just going to give them another shot in there and see what happens. You know, I think ultimately, based on what's, you know, been talked about, I think the Islanders probably were hoping for, you know, a Grubauer or somebody else to be in net, and that Lehner turned out to be one of the backup plans there. So I would not be shocked if goaltending does turn out to be the biggest problem this team faces this season. But, you know, while that's definitely a concern, I wouldn't say, you know, it's absolutely going to be a disaster. There's definitely the chance that either Grice can turn it around or that Lehner, you know, with a new coach, a new system, a new team in front of him, could put together some of the strong results that he has at times shown in the past.
Yeah, and the Islanders, they're going to go through transition. That is a fact. Stan Fischler on last week's episode expected a lot of players to go through a transformation, whether that was Andrew Ladd, Brock Nelson, Anthony Beauvillier, and really replace John Tavares. So from an analytical perspective, who are some players that the Islanders could have that will really break out and help support the team and hopefully help them push the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, you look at the ages of the players on the squad, and then what a lot of the analytics have shown is that the aging curve for players really tend to be a lot younger than we had initially believed. That, you know, 23, 24, you know, when players are that age, you're already seeing a lot of the best that they have to offer, and then they might stay at that level or, you know, very slightly decline until around 30, and then production has the potential to really drop off. So you look at that, and you look, you know, a lot of the depth players that they have are already well past that peak. So I'm looking primarily at those youngest players. So certainly Beauvillier is on that list. I think Nelson, while a bit older than that, is still in that middle range, and, you know, he'll definitely have more ice time, more teammates available, you know, to step him to that higher role. And then the other one that, you know, I'm sure everybody has plenty of feelings on would be Josh Hosang, where I think it's very much going to be a boom or bust thing, where I could easily see him spending most of the season in the AHL if he doesn't really click with it, or if he ends up, you know, really able to connect on that top six, being a part of a scoring line. I could see that one where, you know, this is the season where he becomes a really solid offensive contributor there.
Yeah, that's a lot of great options. Really great to get your insight and perspective on a different side of hockey that I was really, you know, not as well rehearsed in. So thank you so much for joining me today. I definitely would love to stay in touch and continue to talk about some of the stuff we didn't get to today. So thank you so much. I'm glad you joined the show today, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, thanks. You too. Thanks for having me on. Always happy to talk.
Of course. Thank you. So that was a great interview with Alex Nove. I've never heard the analytical side of hockey, and it's definitely something we couldn't hear his answers due to some, you know, phone thing issue, but I was really interested in what he had to say about data science and basically journalism and math, because that's something I'm, you know, hopefully looking forward to doing in college and beyond. So really, really great guy to talk to. I was glad I was able to pair him and then Mark Barber today, a local hockey guy who wants to create a roller hockey league. great pairing today. We learned about all sides of the game, and it was a really fun episode. So thank you so much for joining us today. We will be back next week with another very special guest. So please stay tuned, guys, and I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you have a great day.
This is Tony Clark, Parrot Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through